Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
We've got our take cannons loaded and ready.
Ready.
Absolutely dominant on deep routes. Absolutely dominant on short routes.
The boys are back, baby.
Excellent separation against man coverage.
This is Reception Perception, the show.
Yo, what's cracking, everybody? James Gill, Matt Harmon here with you. You're listening to Reception Perception, the show. All right, Matt. Today's theme is about wide receivers who could have a huge role in 2026, and whether or not we believe in them as players, as full-time players. Parker Washington, Jaden Reed, Michael Wilson are the three guys that we will be discussing today. Can we start there in Duval, man? Parker Washington, last six of the regular season, this guy was incredible, right? Like seven targets, 4.7 receptions per game. 83 yards per game, three total touchdowns, nearly 18 yards per reception. I think that caught a lot of people by surprise. This guy was a big play threat. He was on a 1,400-yard pace the last six games of the regular season, and then he followed that up with a huge 12 targets, seven reception, 107-yard receiving game in the playoffs against Buffalo. What kind of player do we got here in Parker Washington?
Yeah, you know this. I've always liked myself a little bit of Parker Washington. Liked him as a kind of a sleeper in that 2023 NFL draft. Called him kind of like a Golden Tate type of player, a little bit of like a Bud Light Golden Tate. And, you know, I think he actually really kind of became maybe full ABV Golden Tate last season. If you look back on the guys I've said is Bud Light this, Bud Light that, like Amon-Ra St. Brown is Bud Light Cooper Kupp. Maybe just need to stop talking Bud Light. Like these guys, those have just actually turned into pretty good comps.
Yeah, exactly.
If you think about it, because I would argue that St. Brown honestly probably is going to end up with like a better career overall than Cooper Kupp. You look, maybe not that peak 2021 season for Cooper Kupp, but still, anyways, yada yada. Honestly, coming back around to Parker Washington, looking at his full reception perception charting data, I actually do think it's pretty comparable to Golden Tate. Now, one big important piece of context that I want to get out of the way here with Parker Washington before we kind of dive into some of his results and everything is that he's a little bit of a difficult player to judge from a full season sample perspective. Mm. And what I mean by that is I don't think people realize that he was actually getting some pretty decent snap counts for this Jaguars team early on last season. Like he wasn't just a complete bench player that then came out of nowhere to get a lot of playing time in the back half of the year. There's no question like his role and his involvement in the offense changed a lot, but this was a guy that was getting, again, some pretty decent snap counts early in the season, but it was actually more as a reserve outside receiver. You know, this is a new staff that was brought in here, and not only were they trying to figure out what to do with BTJ, they were trying to figure out what to do with Travis Hunter. They also signed De'Ami Brown, which was not a good signing, to kind of be that third receiver. And that sort of left Parker Washington as the wide receiver four, just kind of like a backup guy. And so again, he did not clear a 40% slot rate until after Travis Hunter got hurt during the week 9 bye, and he did not clear 60% snaps in the slot until week 15. So in total, in reception perception, because there's a mix of some games post that week 15 breakout to before that, when he was kind of this reserve outside receiver, he took 39.3% of his sampled snaps in the slot. He was another 6% in the backfield as well. Sometimes as like a motion option, but occasionally they would line him up as a stationary threat in the backfield to get him some layup targets and things of that nature. He is really good with the ball in his hands, as we will discuss. But yeah, in his final four games sampled all after week 15, his rate of snaps off the ball went up to 62%, and his slot rate went up almost 10 percentage points. So I think that's like his true ideal role. You look at him from a dimension standpoint, he is definitely somebody I think that needs to play in the slot again to give him that Golden Tate comparison. I would say that's kind of like the vertical slot archetype, even though Golden Tate had some of those kind of cookie cutter pop gun slot receiver usage seasons with the Detroit Lions under Jim Bob Cooter. I think his best work, Golden Tate, came when he was kind of ripping it down the field as a Z, as a slot. I think Parker Washington at 5'10" and 204 pounds, he is somebody that probably should play in that role as well. So I think it's important context before we dive into some of the numbers here that I think he needs to be viewed as like a slot. To me, slot first and a Z option, not like what he was kind of used as a boundary player at different points early on last season.
The narrative right now surrounding Parker Washington is that he's this just really great player that just needs an opportunity, that he is a better player than Brian Thomas Jr., that he could truly emerge as the number one there in Jacksonville. That's part of the, I think, story right now surrounding Parker Washington. When you charted him over the full season, it was 64% success rate versus man, so very well short of that 70% threshold we're looking for. 78.5% success rate against zone. That surprised me because I thought this guy was going to be a lot better against zone. And again, just falling just short of that 80% threshold we like to look at. And then 57.6% against press. That's, again, not a very impressive number. We'd like that number to be a lot closer to 65% to 70%. So what kind of player here do we have in Parker Washington? And I know that in the profile, you noted that there was a big-time difference between beginning-of-the-year stuff and end-of-the-year stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Like, I do think overall, if you just take those full-season numbers and say he's a 64% success rate versus man and a 79% success rate versus zone player, I do think if you look back over the course of reception perception history, like, you can find a lot of good starting slot receivers that operated at those numbers for multiple seasons. The aforementioned Golden Tate, who I'm going to, you know, bring up again and again in this discussion, would be like, that's why I think he's a comparable player, because he's at those stats for multiple seasons. I mean, if you look at like 2017, one of the Golden Tate's like better seasons, 64% success rate versus man, 81% success rate versus zone. That's important to note for Parker Washington too. Like I mentioned, and you were just alluding to as well, week 15, when he really started to get that plus 60% slot rate, his success rate versus zone coverage actually jumped up to 82%. So I do think once you've found the right role for him, I think that was really a key thing for him becoming the best version of himself. What's interesting, though, for Parker Washington, I think maybe, and I do want to circle back to the Brian Thomas Jr. point at the end of this discussion, because I think he's like the biggest. It's kind of, he's a huge wild card, and he might not even be the biggest wild card in this receiver room, because Travis Hunter probably is the biggest wild card in this receiver room. But again, we'll circle back to all that at the end of the discussion once we get through the Parker Washington stuff. But Washington, I think what's interesting with him is that if you look back at like the other kind of slot receivers that Liam Cohen has had previously, okay, I think the mind immediately goes to obviously Cooper Kupp in 2022. You know, that's, of course, Liam Cohen was the non-play calling offensive coordinator for that Rams season that year. Mm-hmm. Cooper Kupp is obviously a big power slot receiver who's doing a ton of damage short and underneath. Chris Godwin, the 1 year with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, another big power slot player who's doing a ton of damage short and underneath. He was like a yak monster that season. Parker Washington, you look at his route percentage chart, he's not getting used like that at all. Just 1.6% of his routes were screens, 14% slant route rate, curl route rate under 9%. Both the curl and the slant are actually below the NFL average from a route percentage standpoint. He actually wasn't all that successful getting into his slant routes, nor like the quick outs, the flats and stuff. His best work actually comes in the intermediate and downfield area. Out route percentage is above the NFL average. Dig route percentage is above the NFL average. Post route percentage, almost 16%. Massive usage on the post routes there. And his best routes were digs, posts, corner routes, comebacks as well. So this kind of was a bit of a departure from what we... And I even think when Travis Hunter was getting kind of ramped up right before he got hurt, he was mostly used, that he was starting to be used at least as kind of that downfield vertical slot option. And it's just an interesting departure from Cohen now that he's that, the you know, the buck stops with him. He's the head coach slash offensive mastermind of the team. It was more of a vertical slot presence rather than kind of that power slot presence, which, of course, it's a different body type between Parker Washington and like Chris Godwin, Cooper Kupp. But still, I just thought that was an interesting development from a usage standpoint. It was more that vertical slot role.
Okay, so you're talking about the role here of Brian Thomas Jr. And then you basically, Matt, when I think about these three wide receivers, why does it seem like they all have a very niche role? BTJ seems to, again, line up as the outside X receiver the best. Parker Washington seems to be that slot guy the best. And then you've got Jacoby Myers, who I think, again, lines up as a Z receiver the best. Liam Cohen generally mixes his guys up a little bit. But given their respective skill sets, I'm curious to see if all three of these receivers do move around the formation.
I think they will, because I don't think any of them like have to be limited to one type of, you know, usage or anything like that. And I think especially if you look at a guy like Jacoby Myers, who was just, you know, so awesome for them. I mean, he kind of like saved their season, really. Not just because of course, the obvious, like Travis Hunter got hurt, they trade for Jacoby Myers, but also just Jacoby Myers was the guy who could just settle against zone coverage and run routes over the middle of the field, which is what all of these guys were struggling with from December on. Even when Parker Washington is kind of in the middle of this massive breakout, Jacoby Myers led the team in routes by a lot. He tied for the team lead in target share, and then they gave him an extension.
Yeah.
That he's not going anywhere, right? I do think specifically, and I get why in fantasy circles he's not the most discussed guy, because I think if we're trying to hit a home run from this receiver room, it's probably not going to be Jacoby Myers. But I mean, there's if you think about this team, which also complicating this as well, is I think they want to play more 12 personnel, right? They extended Brenton Strange. They drafted Nate Borkircher in the second round of 56 overall ahead of consensus and have a lot of conviction on him as a player. If you think about like there's no way Myers is not going to be on the field in 12 personnel looks, right? I mean, because not only is he super reliable, he's a really good blocker. He can play Z. He's been a guy, even at times in his career with the Raiders, he was more of an outside receiver than an inside receiver. And even again with the Jaguars when Parker Washington's emerging in the slot. So when I look at this Jaguars receiver room, James, I may have said this on the show, but this is just something I'm kind of coming around to. I think that they, and we're going to talk about a Packers receiver next, I think they are going to be the new Packers. I think the base projection should be that this team is going to be very Packers-esque, where they have four receivers that they want to rotate and get on the field. Brian Thomas Jr., Parker Washington, Jacoby Myers, and like Travis Hunter is going to play wide receiver this season. I think there's no doubt about that. He's going to play a little bit of receiver. He's going to get in the mix a little bit here. I could say he's maybe 20% of the routes, right? And that sounds about right. I think that sounds about right. Maybe even 30%. I think it could kind of be a look, if he comes in here and he's an even better version of himself, you know, he's bulked up. He's probably a little bit more savvy at this point in his career than he was certainly last year, when I think his head was kind of swimming at the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. Like there's no reason they don't want to get him on the field on offense to not just make their offense better, but also to justify the second overall pick draft capital that they gave this guy. So that's four receivers that they want to get in the mix, and they want to play 12 personnel, and they want to have, you know, a pretty good run game as well. It does sound very Packers-esque to me, where it's going to be difficult to figure out, like, does anybody even, is there a true number one receiver here? Or is it a little bit of a, hey, we have four guys who could be our number one receiver, very Packers-esque there. But there are ways where that can break in different ways. And I do have a stance on, you know, who could be like the biggest hit here. But again, ultimately, I think a guy like Parker Washington, without a doubt, proved himself that he needs to be in the mix, and he needs to be kind of their primary slot option, right, for the time being. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You sent a shiver down everyone's spine when you said Jacksonville's going to be the new Green Bay here. So I guess my question is Parker Washington the new Jaden Reed, or how are we playing this, man?
Right. That's the question. And to me, I just, and obviously we're going to talk about Jaden Reed in a second. He's the Packers receiver that I mentioned, but he could be a guy that does get squeezed in those two receiver sets, because And this is why it does in some way come down to Brian Thomas Jr. But just before we get to that, I want to note two things with Parker Washington that, you know, I would say he is a solid route runner. He's a solid route runner. He separates well, particularly when he's operating from the slot. He can be a real, real weapon against zone coverage. But, you know, he's not the most explosive player in the world, so I don't think he will ever be like a high tier press beater or one of the better man coverage receivers in the league. But he can absolutely snap off routes against man coverage on the in breakers in particular, where I actually think he is downright fantastic and dynamic.
Okay.
Is in two other phases of the game, which pretty important here, with the ball in his hands and as a contested catch receiver. I mean,
interesting.
And if you go back and read my pre-draft write-up on him, that was some of the stuff that I highlighted with what was really appealing for him was that he was kind of a solid separator, but he was awesome in those two phases of the game. There were some like weird drops, like almost every Jaguars receiver to begin the season. But when there's no way you can say that this guy has poor hands. He saw a contested target on 25% of his targets in the games I charted. He caught 84% of those contested catch chances. I mean, he was awesome. Just tough as shit with the ball in the air, playing it and everything like that. So unbelievable in that way. By the way, he has 91st percentile hand size, which for a guy that is 5'10 and, you know, 204 pounds, like that's pretty crazy that he has pretty significant big hands. Again, this was in my pre-draft write-up on him. Also, though, brings that kind of same like tough, I would say rugged approach when he has the ball in his hands. He was in space on 41% of his sample catches, and he only went down on first contact on 25%. Of those plays. He broke a single tackle on 50% and multiple tackles on 25%. Fantastic results. So again, very Golden Tate-esque, where he's tough at the catch point, he's tough with the ball in his hands, but he's probably what I would say is like a solid route runner that does need the right deployment for him to be best expressed. So that's where, again, we come back to the deployment part of this. Is he the slot first player? Is he the is he the Z receiver over Jacoby Myers? I mean, again, they just extended Jacoby Myers, and he's still a good player. He's going to be 30 years old here relatively soon. So, of course, like he might start to decline at some point. I don't know. It sounds like they want to give Parker Washington a Jaden Reed probably style contract around 17 mil per year. I think that's totally good value for a guy like Parker Washington if that's what they give him. But this is why I say that Brian Thomas Jr. is such a big wild card in this, because of the three players we're discussing here, his 2024 season is the most dynamic we have in the RP database between Myers and Washington and these guys. I mean, you go look at the comps for that Brian Thomas Jr. season, it's like some of the best receivers in football. Like that's the trajectory he should have been on. He took a massive step back last season. As we've discussed ad nauseum, how much of that is injuries? How much is that is like mental? And can he just go ahead and get past it? Because if he gets past it, he's the guy that should be on the field the most, right? As the X receiver. Right. And as the obvious best like vertical boundary option. So that's where it does become a little difficult here. And why I do think my like fantasy take on the Jaguars is that if there's in the range of outcomes where there's a wide receiver one on this team, like it would be BTJ, just because I think he's got the highest ceiling and he should be on the field the most. Like he should be if the Packers analogy holds here, he should be the Romeo Doubs of that room, where he's on the field the most and he's running the most routes and the most snaps, but he's just, you know, don't disrespect to Romeo Doubs, who's turned into a solid NFL receiver. He should be like a significantly better version than Romeo Doubs if he gets back to what he was, even in 2024, much less if he improves on some of the like nitpicks that you could have about his 2024 season.
Oh, man, I'm excited. I think BTJ is going to have a nice bounce back. I have nothing to base that on off of. Just vibes, you know, just vibes and just my history with football. I don't know. I think BTJ has a really good opportunity.
It helps that he said at Jaguars OTAs where, you know, by the way, John Shipley, who does a great job covering the Jaguars for Sports Illustrated, he's a longtime friend of mine in the industry. He's been a great, great Jaguars. He's covered the Jaguars with great ability for a long, long time. He was actually pointing out last season that BTJ was struggling in the offseason, actually struggling with some drops and stuff, and that probably did not get nearly enough pub. What has certainly gotten a good bit of pub is that he's, as John Shipley has said, like been the star, the team MVP at OTAs. Obviously, it's padless practices. Some of BTJ's, you know, issues last season certainly came up with things that you would associate with padded portions of the game. So we do need to see that from BTJ, but that's a nice little start to what should be a good offseason drumbeat. In addition to the fact that direct quote from Brian Thomas Jr. in OTAs when asked about you know, how he's feeling from a health standpoint, he said, "Well, it doesn't hurt to run anymore."
Hey, there you go.
I think that's important. I think that's important to talk about when we're thinking about him bouncing back this year.
Yeah, for sure. All right, very quickly. How do you see this playing out in Jacksonville, specifically for Parker Washington? Can he stand out like he did last year?
Yeah, I think, can he stand out like he did last year?
I mean, look, last six games of the regular season, like I said, he's averaging nearly five receptions and 80 yards per game. I mean, is that the kind of guy that we are looking at? I mean, let's say it's just a bit less. Let's say it's five receptions and like 70 yards per game. I mean, we're still talking about, you know, 1,200 yard season maybe for Parker Washington.
No. Okay. I don't think he's gonna have a 1,200 yard season. If he has a 1,200 yard season, then Trevor Lawrence is the MVP of the NFL, which I think is possible. I mean, I think he's
very possible. He's
a possible MVP bet, right?
Absolutely.
I think Trevor took a step last year. I'm a massive Liam Cohen fan, but I do think that the nature of this passing game will be pretty spread out.
Okay.
To the point that, you know, none of these guys are that individually productive, unless it's Brian Thomas Jr. That's why I do think he's the, like, I think it's been sort of painted on social media that he's going to be this like sacrificial X receiver.
I don't think
Brian Thomas Jr. has to be the sacrificial X of this offense. And if you look, even if he has like Mike Evans's route tree from 2024, when Mike Evans was the X in the offense under Liam Cohen, like that was, he had a great season.
He had a great season.
And obviously Brian Thomas Jr. is not Mike Evans season right now, but like it's very possible that he could be the team leader in all production metrics here. So yeah, I think 1,200 yards, I would take the under on that for Parker Washington. But I could see all of these guys hovering between like 800 and 1,000 yards, which is, you know, kind of, if the Packers guys had all stayed healthy, that was sort of what I would have imagined that those guys, you know, kind of would have done, but nobody ever stayed healthy in that offense. So hopefully we see that for these Jaguars receivers this year. Cause yeah, man, I really am very, very fond of Parker Washington's game. And I'm very fond of kind of all of these guys in this offense right now. They're really set up to be a nice complementary duo, but it definitely might be frustrating to predict on a week to week basis, like who's going to get the targets and who's going to get the usage. I do think that could be a moving target, but you know, maybe I'm wrong. And like Brian Thomas Jr. doesn't bounce back and he gets phased out. I do think it's not likely, but I think it's within the range of outcomes.
Oh, for sure. 100%. I mean, cause he's not Liam Cohen's guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not like Cohen came through and drafted the guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I know the team,
but it's not like Parker Washington is his guy either. You know,
that's true, but he emerged. So there's some of that. I don't know. Where else are you going to get?
I do think last thing, yeah, just ahead. On Parker Washington, last thing on Parker Washington. I do just think like, I think we're in like a weird phase of, I see this. Maybe this happens every offseason, but it's just like the very last thing that happened, the very most recent thing that happened is not always what will happen forever. You know, like we fall into that fallacy every year, individual players and teams
every year.
And that just like the whole season matters for the player, both positive and negative, by the way, and negative.
Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a brand new show. It's called Money Moves. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
So you mentioned the Green Bay Packers, Jaden Reed. The profile is out on Jaden Reed here as well. No more Romeo Doubs, no more Dontavian Wicks. It's now Christian Watson, Matthew Golden, and my guy, Jaden Reed, who only really had about five healthy-ish games last year. I think he had seven regular season games under his belt, but yeah, two of them were, he was clearly not healthy. He had zero games where he played 70% of the snaps. Three of those five games, he played less than 55% of the snaps. You cannot look at Jaden Reed going to 2026 and not ask the question, will he play more in 2026? And I'm talking significantly more. Can he crack 70% snap percentage for Green Bay's offense?
Well, he's never done it, so that would be a new mark for our guy, Jaden Reed. Yeah, you mentioned it. No games over 70% last year. No games over 66% last year. And two, technically, he played 8 games if we throw the playoffs into the mix here. So, technically, it's a full reception perception sample for Jaden Reed. However, we have a 4-snap game against Washington in week 2 and an 8-snap game against the Minnesota Vikings in week 18. So, you know, I would argue he actually maybe had 0 healthy games last year. I think
fair.
That was
that's fair.
don't forget, like, this guy didn't just break his clavicle in week 2, which is ultimately what put him on IR then until week 14. He didn't come back to week 14. He also tried to play through a Jones fracture in his foot. Correct. At the beginning of the season. So
crazy.
Multiple injuries for Reed, and I don't think he like really ever looked like himself. So I think you could make an argument that charting him and writing the profile was a waste of time for the 2025 season. But nevertheless, because it is it's a pivotal kind of year 4 for Jaden Reed, where he does theoretically have a new opportunity in this room, I thought it was at least worth checking in on him, because he is a player I've really, really liked, and I remain really high on Jaden Reed. But yeah, if you look at the overall numbers from last year, it was definitely a decline for Jaden Reed, because again, I don't think he was really ever healthy last season, both at the beginning of the year coming in with the Jones fracture, then coming off of a long, long injury absence. I mean, this is a guy that, previous to last season, was an excellent performer in reception perception. He was a guy that averaged between 2023 and 2024, 72.6% success rate versus man, 82.1% against zone, and 76.6% against press. All of those numbers are down from last season, from last season, based on the first two. So I think that was mostly injury related. We can parse out some of the differences, but yeah, I do think he just probably was never really healthy last year, which is why just production wise never caught on.
Well, you know what's crazy though, Matt? You talked about that, and yet the fact that he was injured pretty much the entire season, or working through injuries almost the entire season, still posted really good numbers. I mean, nearly 70% success rate versus man, that's good. 77% success rate versus zone. Again, that's not the best, but we're still approaching, acceptable numbers here. Look, I should clarify. It's acceptable numbers. We're approaching good numbers at 77% success rate versus zone, and 75% success rate versus press. That's straight up good. Like, again, he's working through injuries and yet still posted really, really solid numbers. I think that should get people excited about what his role could potentially be in Green Bay in 2026.
Totally. I mean, I think that, again, similar to our Parker Washington discussion, if he's 69% against man coverage, 77% against zone, like that's a solid starting NFL slot receiver at a bare minimum. And I think that there is more potential for Reed based on what he has shown previously. I think the areas where we saw some decline for Reed, and I think this obviously matters, when we're doing like the what happened last year, is that he definitely dropped off from like a vertical route standpoint. Because that's the thing with Jaden Reed. He's obviously gets a lot of designer touches and the slot based stuff. And obviously we didn't talk about this, but should note that his role last year and really his role his entire time in Green Bay has just never changed. Through 3 seasons, he's taken 77.5%, 78.2%, and 78.5% sampled snaps in the slot or backfield combined in all 3 of his pro seasons. His rate of snaps on the ball has gone slightly up, but we're talking about like a 6 percentage point gap between year 1 to year 3. So he's been a slot backfield heavy, gadgety at times, like usage, he's getting some of these targets, but he in his second season made a lot of plays downfield and was awesome from a separation standpoint downfield. Last year we saw that really drop off from a separation standpoint down the football field, and I think if he comes back strong in 26, it's because he definitely gets open better in the downfield portions, post routes, 9 routes. We actually saw his usage dip on posts and corners as well. I think the team probably knew he couldn't rip it downfield quite as much as he did when he's at his most healthy format.
Nearly 15% of his routes came on a dig route, though, and still there was incredible, an incredible performer, 86% success rate on dig routes, and that was, I believe, tied for his highest. Yeah, it's tied for his highest route participation, route percentage there in 2025. 14.8% route participation on the dig, 14.8% route participation on the out. This guy's still an incredibly high performer in that intermediate area of the field. It's an area of the field that I think is incredibly important for Jordan Love in this Green Bay offense, man. Talk to me about Jaden Reed, and again, how much will he play in 2026? There's just not that many guys
right
in front of him. Look, Dontavian Wicks is gone. I think that to me is probably the biggest thing, is that there's not a slot, reliable slot guy in there that can take away snaps. You figure Reed's going to work those snaps, but then again, even Matthew Golden, who I know they spent huge draft capital. I didn't really like what I saw from Matthew Golden last year. So I don't know, Jaden Reed, can he play some more outside too? So he's got to find snaps here and there. And clearly I think the biggest runway for him right now is through the slot.
Right. And I think that there's two limitations for Jaden Reed's playing time that really have nothing to do necessarily, I think, with Jaden Reed, the player, but in his first two seasons, if we want to kind of throw out last year where he was dealing with a lot of injuries, and he's had some other injuries crop up here and there over the course of his career, but obviously last year was the worst. But even when he's been healthy, the two limitations for his playing time has, one, been that this team has used a heavy wide receiver rotation, and two, it is that the Packers, and look, we can sit here and disagree with this, and I do think that a lot of Reed's reception perception data points when he's been healthy has pointed to that, like, I don't think he has to be limited to this role, but they have viewed him as a slot only 12%. Like, he doesn't play in two receiver sets, like, the period, end of story. That has been the case. Rich Rebar, the great Lord Reeves, has this stat. This was last offseason, before this past year. I can't imagine it's changed much considering he barely played last year, but this was from May of 2025. Jaden Reed has run 7 total pass routes with 1 to 2 wide receivers on the field over his first two pro seasons. That is 2.6% of the team dropbacks in those sets. Like, he just, doesn't play enough. So I think the question, obviously, between those two, I think the receiver rotation stuff is probably done for the Packers. We've hinted at this over the course of the offseason, but Dobbs is gone. Wicks is gone, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
They extend Christian Watson. They extend Jaden Reed, and obviously Matthew Golden is back. Like, the guys behind them are Savion Williams and like Sky Moore. Like, this looks like a team that should have a pretty clear 3 receiver set of Golden, Watson, and Jaden Reed. So then the question just comes back to the 2 receiver set thing.
Okay.
I don't know. And like, based on history would tell us the Packers are not going to expand his role and his usage, because that's just been the case. But then that brings us back to Matthew Golden. Like, who is Matthew Golden? Because I think he had like a okay rookie season, you know, like at best, I would say he had an okay rookie season. And I don't really have like a strong take one way or the other. Like, I did the whole charting on his rookie season. Obviously he had a mixed but mostly solid prospect profile. Like, he was ranked in that kind of tier of guys that could go either way for me. Yeah. But it's a mixed bag is what the rookie year profile is. Like, there's some clear strengths for sure. I think you could also argue that he ended up kind of having to play in some of Jaden Reed's slot based role, which is, I don't really think is the right usage for him necessarily, but I'm also not quite sure what the right usage for Matthew Golden is. And again, 33rd percentile success rate versus man, 23rd against zone, 51st against press. I just think, like, that is, to me, if he ends up being a good receiver, cool. If he ends up being a bad receiver in the NFL, like, I don't have a strong take one way or the other. So it's just, to me, I think, like, Reed has been a good NFL player before.
Exactly.
So I would give him the first crack at it if I was the Green Bay Packers, but yeah, I have said that for like 2 years now and it's just never happened. So what do I know?
So here's the thing with the Packers. They are very much sizists, right? And so I think a lot of folks are thinking, okay, well, Matthew Golden plays outside and Christian Watson plays outside, so thus, those will be your two wide receivers on the outside, which is funny to me because Matthew Golden and Jaden Reed are basically the same size. They're both 5'11". Yeah. They're both about 190 pounds. As a matter of fact, I think Jaden Reed is probably stronger as a player, more physical as a player than Matthew Golden. Golden very much is like a finesse player to me. So, and Jaden Reed can get after it here a little bit. I don't think we've seen enough to know whether or not he can, you know, be active in the run game. But shoot, like I said, just from a physicality standpoint, like mentality standpoint, go ahead and give me Jaden Reed over Matthew Golden. That being said, Matt, you know what's going to happen. You and I both know what's going to happen. Savion Williams at 6'4", 220 pounds, is going to get out there. He's going to be the stupid Z receiver for Green Bay on these running plays and play action, and they're just going to run Savion freaking Williams out there and drive everyone nuts.
You know what's funny about that, though? Because, I mean, we've both of us have kind of alluded around it and without saying it, is that, okay, like Reed and Golden are competing for like who's the slot and who's the Z here, essentially.
Yeah.
We're just all assuming, like, and I think this is probably the correct assumption, but like, okay, Christian Watson is going to be the primary X receiver. He's actually really never been a primary X receiver in the NFL.
That's like,
it's been Romeo Doubs that's kind of that, like, at times sacrificial X, but then really became like a good solid X receiver in the NFL. His last couple of years in particularly last year, he was good. He's been kind of the primary outside on-ball receiver. And Christian Watson, I haven't done his full charting in 2025 just yet, yeah. But said multiple times, like, based on the games I have logged so far, it's easily, without a doubt, his best pro season. Mm-hmm. But still, he wasn't used, like, as always, as the outside on-ball receiver. So
Savion Williams.
Oh, God. But, like, Savion Williams.
It's Savion Williams.
Dude, Savion Williams.
Sacrificial X. It's happening. It's happening.
And I want to give Savion credit that, like, I actually thought his, if we're talking about like receiving, like catching the ball with good technique, that was actually kind of a strength of his as a prospect. I just think like his route running had like such a long way to go. And if you look at the way that the Packers used him last year, it was on a lot of like BS gadgety stuff.
Right.
Almost like some of the stuff I want them to stop doing with Jaden Reed, especially if we're he's dealing with injuries. Like, there's really no need for him to do like all of the running, rushing gimmicky stuff. I know he's good with the ball in his hands. Like, I actually started kind of using Savion Williams in that way. So that would be a pretty big departure. But I do think that's a rather interesting variable. And like, I might get through the whole
thing, dude. It's happening.
Okay, I actually wasn't saying that is not an interesting variable to me. There's nothing interesting about Savion Williams. Maybe I'm being disrespectful, that's not interesting to me. What is interesting potentially is like Christian Watson, who is a big and obviously really athletic receiver, but and did take a big step last year. But just because he hasn't been an X last year, I think that at any point during his NFL career, primarily, it's not that he's played zero X receiver, but I actually think he's been best expressed when he's working against zone coverage and working after the catch and everything. So I think that's an interesting variable in this, like, hey, the Packers have a pretty clear three receiver set of Christian Watson X, Matthew Golden Z, and then Jaden Reed slot, which is what I think it probably ends up happening here in like a base case scenario. The Watson playing X receiver stuff is at least a new wrinkle that hasn't been considered yet. But I do think that Golden, I have questions about him, but 51st percentile success rate versus press, I actually think he could play a little bit of X. I think that Jaden Reed has been a good press beater previously, not like a ton of volume, of course, because he plays in the slot so much. But I mentioned some of the success rates there for him have been positive. So yeah, overall, like, I think maybe these guys all just kind of move around. It's a very pre-snap motion heavy offense, but you know, even these three guys, it's pretty light. It's obviously light after them. We're talking about Savion Williams. We're talking about Sky Moore, one of my big draft swings and misses. And I'm not necessarily saying this is going to happen for him in Green Bay. So yeah, it's a very light receiver room.
Very light.
And when they probably, by the way, have injury questions with Watson's missed time, Reed has missed time.
Yeah,
we'll see what Golden is. And this is a team that I think probably wants to throw the ball more this year because, oh, by the way, their defense is probably going to be I don't know. We'll see what the defense looks like with Jonathan Gannon taking over. Micah Parsons not going to be healthy all season. Exactly. And their starting running back has legal issues right now and wore down at the end of last season. So the Packers are kind of a tough team to figure out in general. And that's including their receiver room, where there is theoretically more clarity. And like, we should be more excited that these guys, again, in theory, Watson, Reed, Golden, have more clear playing time. And yet at the same time, there are still questions with, I would say, all three of those guys to some degree, with Watson being, in my opinion, the most coming in with the most momentum off of last season with a career year, despite tearing his ACL in the same calendar year.
I'm going to throw out one more name just because I have I am the self-proclaimed sleeper king here, but UDFA, J. Michael Sturdivant out of Florida and UCLA. He's 6'3", 207 pounds. He ran a 4.440 and has a 39-inch vertical with a 10.11 broad jump. I'm just throwing that name out there because Green Bay actually did aggressively pursue him after the draft and gave him guaranteed money. So, which is, by the way, not like you never see that. Not never, but you rarely see that with UDFAs, but they gave him guaranteed money. So J. Michael Sturdivant is somebody that Green Bay targeted after the draft. So I'm just going to throw that name out there, so that we can all be pissed off when Savion Williams and J. Michael Sturdivant are out there in two receiver sets and Matthew Golden and Jaden Reed are nowhere to be found. Okay. I'm just going to throw that out there. Okay.
It's been said. I wanted to chart J. Michael, but I was like, I don't think I can mix these UCLA Florida games together to make a usable sample.
So weird.
Didn't really make a lot of sense. Can I just leave us with one disaster? Since I feel like I'm being a little negative on this episode so far, I'm going to just lean into it really here. Okay, with Jaden Reed. I think Reed is good. I'm a fan of Jaden Reed.
Yep.
I think he can separate at all three levels against man coverage. When he's been healthy, he's been really, really good. If he just can get back to who he was in 2024 and kind of continue on that trajectory, I really like Jaden Reed. And I'm a fan of Jaden Reed's game. Okay. I probably would have said all of those same things about Curtis Samuel. And there's just always going to be these guys,
yeah,
that reception perception, you know, likes more than NFL coaches. I think Curtis Samuel was definitely one of those guys. And if you look at, Curtis Samuel wasn't a bad NFL player by any means. No. He never really he had some really good solid seasons and moments, but also got banged up a lot. And I think kind of got pigeonholed eventually as a slot gadgety guy, despite I liked his route running and separation ability against man coverage. You go into the player comparison tool, you look at all three of Jaden Reed's seasons, you know who's popping up like several times.
Oh boy.
Curtis Samuel. So okay. It is what it is.
If there's any modicum of hope, it's the fact that they just gave him a 3-year, $50 million contract extension, right?
Yeah.
$17 million per. That's not a nothing contract, you know? They like him.
It's what Dobbs got. So
I'm just saying, financially, they're saying, okay, we like the guy. Let's see if we can get him on the football field. Michael Wilson got on the football field a ton last year. As a matter of fact, the last 8 games of the season, you can't tell me there was a more statistically productive wide receiver than Michael Wilson. He had 8 games, he was on pace for 187 targets, 119 receptions, on pace for 1,650 yards, and on pace for 13 touchdowns as well. He had a 185-yard game and a 142-yard game in that 8-game stretch. My man Michael Wilson was absolutely lighting it up for fantasy purposes. And then when you take a look at his reception numbers, Matt, there is a lot to be interested. The interest is peaked in Michael Wilson. 72% success rate versus man, 75% success rate versus press, but just 72% versus zone, which is obviously not a very good number at all. But like I said, there's stuff in that man press score that gets you a little interested in his long-term prospects.
Man, Michael Wilson, I mean, you mentioned some of the production. This is a sub 600 yard receiver in each of his first two pro seasons, basically an afterthought. We'll talk about it. I charted both his work as a prospect and as a rookie and was like, oh, I think this guy can actually play a little bit. But I didn't chart his second season because he was just like so buried, you know, just wasn't a guy that was involved very much.
Right.
And I would say that his breakout at the back half of last season has almost like over radicalized me against what receiver production, which I was already pretty radicalized against like receiver production.
Okay.
And especially the idea that like, oh, this guy doesn't earn targets. I mean, Michael Wilson was getting targeted an absurd amount in the back half of the season. And did he just suddenly like become a target earner in the back half of the year? No. It just Marvin Harrison Jr. got hurt and then they like prioritized Michael Wilson. So it's like literally nothing changed about Michael Wilson, the player.
Yeah.
Because he was actually a pretty good player before. Like there was no reason he couldn't, quote, earn targets before. He just wasn't targeted. Like that's why I think like certainly some guys are like they earn targets, of course. But the idea of it in the inverse is what I've like become radicalized against. Like he just hasn't really been a target earner. Is he not a target earner? Has he just not been given the opportunity? Because really what happened with Wilson is the opportunity just shot through the roof. And I have said it was a fantasy scam, which Jacoby Brissett in the back half of last year. And what I mean by that, Jacoby Brissett took over as the starting quarterback. The Cardinals dropped back 745 times. That is 57 more than the Bengals lead the league last year. So not only did obviously then Marvin Harrison Jr. got hurt, that contributed to the statistical success. But like all that happened, they were just a negative game script a ton. They were dropping back. Trey McBride led the NFL with 694 routes, and Michael Wilson was second with 630 routes run. So yes, it was definitely a scam in the back half of the year, like a fantasy scam with Jacoby Brissett, Michael Wilson, and Trey McBride and all that. That being said, I still think there's a lot to like about Michael Wilson. And I think that what the back half of his season revealed, and this is something that even I've actually been a little bit less critical of Drew Petzing's work than some of like my peers and other people in the space. I think he kind of got a bad rap in some ways. But the one thing that I think really irritated me from a pass game standpoint with Petzing is that it was just when the two guys were healthy prior to Wilson's breakout in the back half of last year, it was just always Marvin Harrison Jr. at X receiver.
Right.
And always Michael Wilson at Z receiver. And there was very little interchangeability with that, which is so annoying to me because if you go back and read Michael Wilson's rookie year profile, I kind of compared him favorably to Michael Pittman. I think Pittman obviously became a little bit better of a zone beater over the course of his NFL career than Michael Wilson is, which we could talk about. But
yeah,
I said at the end of that profile, because again, Pittman was the comp, a guy that could play X, but also Z. This is a direct quote. Quote, Wilson showing he can handle multiple receiver positions last year should allow the Cardinals to move the 2024 rookie around, that being Marvin Harrison, and not just tether him to their X receiver spot for all of his snaps. And then they quite literally just did the exact opposite of that until Michael Wilson had this breakout moment. And then he kind of started to break out as the outside on-ball receiver. And Harrison, in the one game before he got the heel injury after the appendectomy and the whole deal, he was actually kind of being used more off the ball. So I'm actually pretty excited to see what these two guys look like together in a new offense, even though, I don't know how good they're going to be in the quarterback positions in flux. But I'm really excited about the pre-snap role and deployment for Harrison and Michael Wilson in this offense, because I think there's a lot of ways they could be used interchangeably.
I think Little LaFleur is going to just utilize him so much more and so much better than what we saw under Petzing. Again, I hear what you're saying in regards to Petzing, but I don't know, man. Play calling was tough.
I'm on an island with this take. It's fine. I get it.
I tell you what, though. They do not have a lot of room for injury in Arizona. The wide receiver depth is incredibly light. Kendrick Bourne and Devin Duvernay are the only recognizable names. They've got somebody on the roster called Xavier Worthy I've never heard of in my life. He's got 7 career receptions.
You said Xavier Worthy.
Oh my God. Xavier Weaver.
You actually tried to give him a name you had heard of.
Yeah, exactly. Xavier Weaver, I've never heard of in my life. 7 career receptions over 2 years. Reggie Virgil is somebody they drafted in the 5th round out of Texas Tech. He's 6'3 and 187 pounds. He's built like a basketball player, is Reggie Virgil. But yeah, man, I don't know. Mike, I guess the real question becomes, okay, Michael Wilson clearly is going to have a huge role in this offense. It's Marvin Harrison Jr. It's Michael Wilson. It's Trey McBride. And obviously they spent huge draft capital on Jeremiah Love. The question I think becomes, Matt, and I want to know where you stand on this. Was this a fluke year for Michael Wilson, or the other extreme end of it is he actually the number one wide receiver over Marvin Harrison Jr.? Where are we at with Michael Wilson in terms of 2026?
Man, that's such a hard question, because I think the answer is no, it wasn't a fluke. Like, he is actually a really good NFL player, is Michael Wilson. But I don't know that I would say he's definitely the wide receiver one over Marvin Harrison Jr., just because, like, I still remain really high on Marvin Harrison Jr. And I think Mike LaFleur's comments about these receivers, this was like right before I went on vacation, and it was very clear to me that because how much this annoyed me, I needed to go on vacation. And I had a whole rant about this on my Yahoo show, just like how badly these comments got misconstrued, and like I needed to take a break from social media and thinking about football for, you know, several weeks, which I did, and it was nice and refreshing. Yeah, okay. And yet, so basically what happened, like, long story short, was Mike LaFleur kind of said, like, oh, we see Marvin Harrison Jr. as the X receiver, and then like Michael Wilson more as the Z receiver, closer to the core, kind of like Puka Nacua. And of course, the internet is like, well, he's going to be in the Puka Nacua role. And yeah, it's funny, because a lot of the comments actually were talking about like Michael Wilson as a smaller, more compact receiver who could be useful as a blocker and like as an insert player in the running game, which I didn't see a lot of the fantasy accounts getting excited about the running game snaps that Michael Wilson's going to get as a blocker. And like, definitely he fits that more than Marvin Harrison Jr. is. But this is why we kind of hinted this a little bit in our Brian Thomas Jr. discussion. Just because the guy is an X receiver doesn't mean he's like a sacrificial player. It's still good to be an X receiver.
Yeah, exactly.
Like in the NFL, especially in an offense like this. And this was the part of the stuff that didn't get kind of discussed enough when this quote, like when these comments were out there, that he was talking about Mike LaFleur, just how much that with all the motion and stuff, they blur the lines between some of these traditional, you know, positional designations and everything. Yeah. And that's didn't happen enough previously with the old Arizona staff. It was like, yeah, Marvin Harris Jr. would be like an outside boundary receiver, but you can do that at the snap of the ball and have somebody cut. You know, we talk about like Jimmy Horn Jr. doing this for Tetero McMillan, cut in with that full speed motion to then essentially give him the inside leverage on dig routes, which Marvin Harris Jr. has been awesome at running those routes over the course of his NFL career. So I very much think it could be like these guys are close-ish in production. I just think that I still remain a little higher on Marvin Harrison Jr.'s potential than maybe the public does. And that doesn't mean that I'm down on Michael Wilson at all, because Michael Wilson is a really good receiver. You mentioned the numbers against press man coverage, 71.9% success rate versus man, 75% success rate versus press, 75th percentile mark there. Like, there's no reason he can't be like an outside on ball receiver at times to allow Marvin Harrison to get some use off ball and everything. I really like that for him. I do think he's always going to be a little bit below average against zone coverage, just because he's not the fastest player in the world. And he definitely struggles to separate down the football field. And I think that will, again, always be like a part of his game. However, if you look at like the routes he is successful on, they do map pretty well to what the Rams do with their receivers. You know, he's specifically like Puka Nacua barely runs 9 routes. You know, he runs post routes every now and again for sure. And when he gets targeted, he's good on those now. That's because he's an elite receiver in the NFL. But even if you look at like his earlier seasons, he's more of that like in cut guy, out routes and stuff like that. And I think Michael Wilson is solid in that area and actually is really good on slant routes and curl routes and things of that nature. And that was actually one area where I'd like to see him used more as an isolated receiver on some of those curls and stop routes. Even if he's not the best vertical threat, he's so good at timing when he needs to break down against man coverage and some of those match stuff on the perimeter, in addition to the fact he's good at the catch point. So I like Michael Wilson a lot. I just am a little bit higher on Marvin Harrison Jr.'s potential, even if, yes, we can acknowledge that we haven't seen that over the course of a full season yet.
All right, there you go. Michael Wilson's best routes in 2025 were the curl and slant, 81% success rate on the curl, 83% success rate on the slant, and he ran those both at a pretty high rate, 13%. Route participation on the curl, 14, nearly 15% on the slant as well. So it's somebody who in Michael Wilson has an ability to get open in that short and intermediate area. And then every time they kind of get him free down the road, I don't know, I thought he did a pretty good job making plays too. So in terms of the contested catch stuff, is there stuff to get excited about there for Michael Wilson?
Yeah, I think Michael Wilson definitely, when we're talking about him as a contest, he has really, really good hands. And honestly, I think at times Marvin Harrison Jr. has fallen apart in that particular area of the game. He's had some bad drops. Did improve as a contested catch receiver and made some leaps there in his second season, but he just had those really like bad high profile drops. We're talking about like the game against the 49ers, and then probably one of the most hilariously bad drops in the entire NFL season was against the Seahawks, where it's like a simple slant route and he bumbles it up in the air and it becomes an interception. So like some of those moments were obviously not good for Marvin Harrison, but he was better in the contested catch game. But like Michael Wilson, rather unpeachable there, only dropped 2.2% of his sample targets. He saw a contested target on 21.5%, caught 80% of those contested targets. So again, I actually think like he's a really reliable tight coverage receiver. He's a really reliable guy that can get you the football like when you need him to. That's part of the reason that he wasn't just this like volume inflated, even if I said it, like the production was a little bit scammy, but he was good when just given opportunities last year. Also better in space, I think, than credited too. Only in space on 32% of his sample catches, which is a pretty low number, but he only went down on first contact on fewer than half of those plays. So again, doesn't have like the speed of a Puka Nacua, doesn't have like that full gear, but he definitely can like power through the first. He's a power based player, I think, is Michael Wilson, which is why he shows up against the physical like press man coverage looks and everything. So ultimately, if you look at the player comparison tool, for him, you're going to see a ton of like X receivers at various stages of their career, honestly, for Michael Wilson. But there's two comps that really stand out to me. Allen Robinson pops up twice for Michael Wilson. Obviously, Robinson was a top level producer for multiple teams before he fell off. But he really started doing damage in Chicago when he was moved around the formation and wasn't just an X for them. And then T. Higgins, also his 2024 season. And I think that's instructive for multiple reasons for Michael Wilson. One, because T. Higgins is kind of like the classic. He's not used as a pure X, but he is very much like that X receiver archetype. But he isn't just an X because it allows them to move Jamar Chase around. And again, I think that's like helpful for our discussion here with Wilson, is that his own ascension is good for him, obviously. But I also think his ascension should allow them to do more with Harrison than what we've seen previously. So yeah, again, this was kind of my hope for these two Cardinals receivers a couple of years ago after looking at Harrison as a prospect, of course, but also what Michael Wilson was as a rookie. And I'm still like holding on to hope that that can happen here with the staff that I do think is better about weaponizing their receivers pre-snap than Drew Petzing will be.
Totally agree with you. By the way, go check out the website, receptionperception.com. You can find all these profiles, and our guy Alfredo Brown, by the time you hear this podcast, we'll have dropped fresh quarterback profiles on Caleb Williams and a bunch of these other quarterbacks that high profile quarterbacks that that you're curious about as well. So go check out the website, receptionperception.com. We got to get out of here. For Matt Harmon, I'm James Coe. We'll see you. But remember, it's never too late to chase your dreams. All right. Peace.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday covering all things U.S. Men's National Team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.